You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Welcome to Beyond the Game. My name is Gregan, and today I'm chatting with Perry, known for streaming Elden Ring using an EEG monitor.
I had no idea that you could use or find EEG that was personal use and portable and all of this stuff. Someone on YouTube controlled a car with it, and then people were turning on and off lights, so I just thought, hey, Elden Ring.
What do you do with your brain to use each of the buttons?
So what it is it basically is just a bunch of visualizations. So what it does is it records those holistic images of what your brain looks like when you're doing that certain thing, and it recognizes when you're doing that.
What's the negative side of wearing an EEG?
If it's in the wrong place, or if you're just not used to it, it does squeeze you a little bit.
You built up your EEG calluses.
Yeah. I think the sides of my head are just really dense now.
Yeah. Make sure to follow for future episodes, and let us know who you want to hear from next. I hope you enjoy this conversation as we get to know Perry beyond the game. Okay.
Hello.
Perry, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm excited for this one because I found out about you through Jake Lucky's tweet. Explain what you did, and instantly I was fascinated by what you do. You're a streamer who uses an EEG monitor, so a brain scanning tool, to play video games and do all sorts of other things as well.
Exactly.
Talk to me about what you do on stream and why you decided to do it.
So in terms of that project, basically it started out just as kind of a fun thing. I had no idea that you could use or find EEG that was personal use and portable and all of this stuff. And I worked with EEG a bunch, but like the proper massive medical ones during my master's. And I had no idea you could get these little ones that you could do whatever you wanted with. And then someone on YouTube controlled a car with it, and then people were turning on and off lights. So I just thought, hey, Elden Ring. Actually, the first thought was Minecraft, because it's always the first thought. Mm-hmm. And then Elden Ring is the natural thing. Let's try and do the hardest possible thing I could possibly do.
So is that why you chose Elden Ring? Because you thought, I mean, if I can do this, then that proves that this is possible.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think it was also, I played a little bit of Elden Ring and Dark Souls on stream before, and I was shockingly awful at it. So I think I had a personal vendetta, something to prove, definitely.
I guess you probably got better having to go against the natural movement using a controller, because you had to sort of think it up with your EEG.
Oh my God, Greg, and I'm so good at Elden Ring now.
I mean, if you're literally combining a challenging controller with a challenging game, so you have to find secret ways around stuff that most people wouldn't think
of. Yeah, you have to be really good with the controls that you do actually have more control over. And you have to really know the bosses and really be able to do timing stuff. Otherwise, there is no chance at all. There's about a second delay between trying to do the right pattern of brain activity to trigger the button and actually doing the thing in game, because you're literally changing your biological vibes, I suppose. And that always takes a beat to do, especially me, because I have symptoms of ADHD. Mm-hmm. So focusing and task switching and attention, all of that stuff is a challenge anyway. Mm-hmm. So without knowing how to do all that other stuff in Elden Ring, you've got no chance. So now somehow I've gone from not knowing that I should level up and really just getting absolutely decimated. That was an annoying stream for everyone watching me. Level up, Perry. No. not knowing how to level up to absolutely destroying. Hmm. Weirdly, I'm good at Elden Ring.
I guess you now know the best combinations of things for every boss so that you can save the challenging controlling using your brain.
Yeah.
By having like shortcuts. I guess we've been speaking about this EEG. I guess you want to explain how you've calibrated your brain to control buttons. Like, what do you do with your brain to use each of the buttons?
So what it is it basically is just a bunch of visualizations. And when you're doing different stuff, your brain activity is different. So me talking to you right now, my brain activity is going to look strange and different to anything else. And that's the frequency of brain waves and then where they're coming from and how much there is. So what it does is it records those holistic images of what your brain looks like when you're doing that certain thing. And it recognizes when you're doing that. And then when it recognizes it over a certain threshold, it pushes the button through all the coding stuff that I've done. So it's basically, that's exactly what it is. And it's pretty simple when you boil it down. So for certain things, for example, I'm imagining pushing a cube forward. And that's one of them. And then he dodges.
Okay. So how quickly can you imagine pushing a cube?
Now I can do it quickly because I practiced. At the beginning, it took a while because I would get distracted by different things. You can't blink because blinking sends a lot of electrical activity and kind of messes up the whole thing. So you have to kind of stare at this cube, and that takes a lot of practice as well. Not to mention, there's the soundtrack of the game.
Oh, so you've got the cube actually in front of you?
Sometimes, yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's the visualization that they give you on the software. So it's a cube moving in different ways, and you can train it to that. So there is an image of a cube on the screen, just so I know if I'm doing it right, and a little power meter that's like, yeah, this looks good. You're doing the right thing. I've gotten a lot better at it. The main thing is not necessarily visualizing the right thing. The main thing is switching between visualizations quickly. Mm. And I don't know if it's just me, but I really struggle to go from, okay, I'm pushing the cube. I'm not pushing the cube. I'm spinning a plate. I'm singing for some reason, music helps. So if I imagine or I sing a certain thing, that really helps. So one of mine is singing the habanera, the and while a cube is sinking, and that works.
And that changes the brain weight. So how many buttons have you linked up now? Because obviously you started off with simple, like one button.
Yeah, just the one.
To your brain, and then you added a second input, and now you're at a stage where you've got hands-free input. Mm-hmm. So what was the process of going from one to the other like? Did you have to trial and error and test different things out to try and differentiate them?
Yeah, there was a lot of different iterations of the visualizations, because they have to be different from each other enough and different from your neutral, your resting enough, that the software can actually pick up the difference and know what it's doing. So we just started with the one, and that was really difficult. It was really, really hard, and I could barely do it to begin with. And then eventually, once you do enough trials, so we've got like 500, 600 trials of that, and that means it's recording me doing that over and over again and takes the average, of course. So once we had enough trials of one of them, it was pretty much solid. It could do that quickly. And then I got better at doing it and knowing what it was. And then you're ready to add the second one. The problem with adding another one is that all of a sudden the software gets really confused. And so you don't have to just train up the second one again. You have to train up the first one again as if from nothing. Mm. Now we're adding a third. It's almost there. It's so almost there. But when you add a third, you don't have to train up just the third. You have to train up the first and the second one again. And it takes hours and hours and hours. But we've also got gyro control. So that's how we can do it hands-free, because we've got the attacking, the dodging, and I can move the character. As long as I don't need to heal, it's fine.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, seeing as you can just dodge with your brain, I guess you won't need to heal.
Exactly. Easy.
I was watching a stream yesterday, and you can't jump yet either, right? So if you're running along and there's a... something to jump over, you have to run around it.
Yeah. I have to run around it. It's really annoying. I also can't enter doors, so I have to cheeky press the button, and then everyone in chat goes, "You're cheating."
Well, Well, so when you first started out, people didn't believe you were doing what you're doing because you had the controller in your hand, right?
Yeah.
So I know this experience because I played Rocket League with my chin at one point to try and raise money for a special effect to have accessibility equipment for people who can't control through normal control systems. Mm. And all I did was have a controller on a mount and use my chin to move the stick. Everything else was done with my hands on a keyboard.
Yeah.
So the moment you take your hands away and they're doing something else, people are going to be like, oh, it's not actually doing it, so on and so on. And you had a similar thing where you were using your mind for one button, everything else was with the controller. Yeah. So you were technically using a EEG monitor to press a button. But
everything else was, exactly.
So it didn't look as good. Whereas now you have got that fully hands-free, and I've seen
I can go like
you go like this to try and like prove a point. You're like, I have no hands on anything right now.
Do you know the reason I do that is because Asmongold said it looked cool one time. He reacted to the content, which was amazing, and he said, and look, she looks like she's praying. And I'm like, okay, that's what I'm doing from now on then.
So you had the pray / I'm not using my hands,
I'm not using, look at this.
So now you're hands-free. What was that moment like when you got your first hands-free kill, I guess, in Elden Ring?
It was amazing. It felt really good. I was expecting it to be long and painful. But what I've realized is that, and Elden Ring players know this, Margit is not that hard.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I might get, I might get attacked for saying that.
It's not that hard in your experience.
Oh, okay. Maybe I'm just, too good at the game. That's what it is. No, but I thought it would be a really long, arduous process. But I guess because I've done so much training and I'm quite good at using it now over a long journey because we've completed the game, so I kind of have done it all before. It was amazing. It just felt good. It felt like I was 11 from Stranger Things, and it was just it was beautiful. And before, because I was using a controller, I was basically just playing the game normally pretty much, and then every now and then I would painfully try to attack and sometimes it wouldn't work and I'd just be stood there. There are loads of clips of me just stood in front of the boss, not doing anything. And then people in chat are like, attack. And I'm like, I'm trying. I'm doing my best. But no, it was amazing. It was really, really good. There are moments where it's still painful, especially now that I'm trying out the third input. So we attempted the fire giant with three inputs and the gyro controls for movement.
I saw that. That did not look fun.
It was the least fun thing I've ever done. I hope the stream was still fun.
Yeah. But well, it's interesting you say that. So with the stream being fun, so I want to ask a question about this. Gimmicky ideas for stream, and like what you're doing is more than a gimmick because you're now elevating the idea, you're trying out different things. But what I mean by that is when you do something that's very viral, like you were viral through Jake Lucky sharing it, you know, your TikToks will be fairly viral, like all of those kinds of things, quite viral, like your reels as well, right? With that, you get people come in, they see the gimmick and they go, wow, that's cool. And then they move on,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
Whereas it's quite hard to build that regular fan base with things like that, because ultimately you're playing a game worse than most people because you're creating a challenge for yourself with that control gimmick. And beyond just watching someone move their head and everything, you're essentially watching a worse stream.
Yeah.
Unless there's other things that you do. And that's why I wanted to ask, what have you done around the building around a gimmick to make your streams engaging in a way that people want to come back and watch?
Well, in terms of the EEG, I'm very much kind of, I put it in this progress narrative. So just for that, people come back to see how it's developing, as you've said. I am also incredibly hilarious and I have a sparkling charisma. So that, I imagine, comes into it. I tend to mix it up with, because half the time I'm doing the EEG stuff or other projects. We've got other projects going as well. And the other half the time I do semi-educational psychology, just chatting. So I'll kind of throw that into it. I'll keep an eye on chat and we'll be having conversations. So it's more like a regular psychology, just chatting stream, while I'm also trying to do this difficult thing. And so hopefully people enjoy that. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the time, which is so unbelievably flattering and validating, a lot of the time people will come for the EEG stuff because that's the reels that they've seen. But I won't be doing that stream. I'll be doing the psychology stuff and they'll stay and they'll be like, huh, I didn't think I would enjoy this. This is not what I wanted, but cool. Mm-hmm. And so
there's
that's
more
really
to
cool.
it than just the EEG stuff. So I guess we'll talk about that as well. You've had some quite viral TikToks and reels. I guess, what's that experience like when you suddenly have this massive boom in popularity, like the Jake Lucky moment, for example,
oh, yeah.
that suddenly spiked your viewership, your followers all went up like crazy,
yeah.
and suddenly there's loads more eyes on you and, and everything like that. How was that experience for you with the virality of your content?
At first, it was quite overwhelming because suddenly you go from this little streamer who has a very intimate community and you can sort of dismiss a lot of the stuff that you say and do if you sound stupid on stream because, oh, there's not a lot of people here anyway and they all know me, they all like me, it's fine, to suddenly, okay, I'm now accountable and I've got to really think and everyone's looking at me. The first, even before Jake Lucky, but as you say, that was the moment that absolutely turned things around. I owe him quite a lot for that, although he'll disagree with me on that point because he's lovely. But even before that, I had just one viral TikTok on... I was using the EEG, but I wasn't controlling a game. It was just the visualization of what my brain activity was like, and I was playing a horror game. And it was one moment where there was a jump scare, and then my brain activity just... boomed, and that one went viral for whatever reason, and I remember just sitting there watching the numbers go up, and it was the most panicked I've ever felt, but also so lovely and, like I say, so validating, and I feel just really, really excited for what's to come. And as this becomes more, I guess, well known, I don't know how well known it is, but as it becomes more well known, there are less people saying that this is fake. Mm-hmm. And there is more, there's more awareness about neuroimaging testing and psychology and stuff like that, which is awesome just in a general way. But it's also good for me because it's so positive. Everyone's been so lovely and so encouraging. And yeah, even if you get over the overwhelming part. But to be fair, I felt that way anyway when I started streaming. The first time that I streamed, there was obviously no one watching. And then you get like one viewer and then all of a sudden your heart is in your chest and you're just like, oh. And it's like, oh God, someone else is here. So I think if you're online in any profession, any number of people who are watching you, it's always going to be overwhelming to start. And then...
it's every like incremental jump. Yes, and that's where exactly. The virality is quite... a big jump.
That is a massive it's a massive jump. It's much bigger than getting one viewer or two after zero.
Because you were mentioning to me before we recorded this, you posted a reel that went viral and your following went from 2,000 to 50,000
on Instagram. Yeah, which is insane.
And
right,
and that means now every single time you post on Instagram, where before you could potentially have posted quite intimate family stuff or like hey, I'm just out with friends for dinner. Now it's like, wait, everything I post is being seen by 50,000 people I don't know.
Yeah. My posts used to get likes and views from just my circle. And now each one has thousands of likes and interactions, which is just wild. And it's lovely. It's so nice. And it's nice to know also that people are interested in what I'm doing. And it's validating for me because... the stuff that I do and the stuff that I talk about, even aside from the EEG, is something that I've always found fascinating. And a lot of the time when you have a very specific interest, especially if it's scientific, not always the people around you are going to care. Similarly, there are things I don't care about that my friends talk to me about a lot. And it's going to be the same way with anything. So the fact that now I know that there are people who have the same interests as me and want to know more about this stuff, it means that when I'm ranting incessantly on the internet, there's a purpose to it now, which is nice. There was before, but it's very validating. Validating is the word I keep coming back to, and that's what it is.
I guess when you come up with something unique, you're always just hoping there is an audience out there for it.
Yeah.
And you just never know what how your unique combination of factors, whether it's your ideas, whether it's your personality, whether it's the game you're playing. I mean, even like the vibe of your community can massively dictate how people enjoy your content. So... you found that niche and you're growing with it. I guess with that, you said you had a master's in psychology, right? I don't know if you mentioned psychology, but you got a master's in psychology and there you've thought about going back to education for something like a PhD.
Yeah.
With that, like, how do you feel right now about the idea of being a full-time creator?
Well, I'm trying to, the plan is to keep the streaming the same. as much as I can, and the content putting out there the same. So if that means delegating more and things like that, and I'm applying for clinical training now, and I'm trying to get that part-time and flexible so that I can keep the streaming the same. It will be a challenge. I have a feeling I'm going to be working 24/7, but it's something that I think is really valuable. And this sounds really bad, but getting a PhD and getting a job in clinical psychology looks good for the stream. It's all about the stream. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, it all comes back to the stream. If I can say I have a PhD, then it will stop as many of the TikTok boys, as I call them, from being like, you're not even qualified. You don't know what you're talking about. Mm. And I'm just sitting there like, I know.
Yeah. I hate to break it to you, but no matter what you do in life, people on TikTok
will, the TikTok boys,
will always dismiss you for not knowing what you're talking about.
They're always that. That's why my build now in Elden Ring is swords instead of magic, just to stop the TikTok boys so much. But it's a bleed build. So, we've got the same problem.
I mean, everyone's got an opinion on everything. This is what we found with this podcast, is the clips that do the best are the ones where someone on TikTok comments negatively about it. And therefore, you have a little war in the comments.
Ah, perfect. And it's amazing.
Then they're like, by being annoyed at your content, they then increase the engagement on your content.
Absolutely.
And therefore, make it go more viral. So thank you.
I always encourage the arguments. I stroke the flames. Yeah. Like, oh, really? Are you going to take that?
Yeah, my goodness. The online world and the comments they make. We were speaking a little bit about this earlier when we were having lunch about that kind of weird connection that content creators and streamers have with people on the internet, and especially people they don't know.
Mm-hmm.
How do you deal with, as a streamer, especially when you grew suddenly, you had people who were quite close to you in the community, the people who come regularly, you know them by name, probably know a bit about them and so on.
Yeah.
And then suddenly they're diluted by hundreds of people who you don't know. And you want to treat everyone like you did before, but there's too many people to manage. How did you deal with that relationship as a streamer with a suddenly too big audience to know personally?
Yeah, it's difficult, isn't it? And you feel really sad for them as well, because you are making friends and you are making friendships. And just like your friendships in real life, it's tricky to keep in touch with everyone, especially if you got just, if you're busy and there's just loads going on. So I think that's comparable. I think for a lot of people, the people who were coming maybe for the wrong reasons or were a bit assumptuous, if that's a word, about the nature of our relationship, they pretty much went, I think. They come sometimes, but it's not the type of content they're looking for anymore, which is fair. I think the reason why you watch smaller streamers is for that intimacy. And if that's gone, then fair enough. It's not the right thing. But something I do to just kind of solidify, hey, we're still a community. We still can be close-knit and we can still talk about different things. Especially as a psychology streamer, it's important as well to provide some support. I'm not really qualified yet to give anyone any psychological advice, but I can be an ear and support. And people like that. It's sometimes their only outlet. And of course, I've made actual friends as well, so I want to keep in touch with those. So something I do is I make use of Discord quite a lot. So we have little movie nights and games nights and conversations plays, lots of different channels that everyone can be talking on, trying to maintain that even if we're maintaining it off stream.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But community management alongside
exactly
all the other things you're having to focus on.
Exactly. I mean, it's a change. It's sad in some ways, but I guess the goal of every content creator is to grow. So it's a good thing that it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
If you're doing well.
Last question I wanted to ask about the whole EEG thing was about when you were doing your master's, you said you got to use the EEG tools that are the more expensive ones they use in clinical practice and stuff, rather than the personal use ones you use on stream. When you did that, did you have any research you did about gaming in relation to EEG at the time?
My dissertation, I didn't actually use EEG for this in the end. I played around with it and then thought this is going to be too complicated and too time consuming to actually get participants and analyze this data. But originally I started using EEG for this. My dissertation was on visual perception and how your vision changes with FPS gaming specifically.
Oh, so, interesting.
Yeah, because I think FPS gaming is one of those things where you have to really be paying attention. And there are really high stakes, and it's all about being really quick to find the enemy before they find you, and then you have to aim. So there's a whole different thing. And with different FPS games, you're looking far away to someone who's camouflaged, and then sometimes they're right there and they're bright blue, depending on the game that you're playing. Mm. So they're really, really good. And there's loads of research. There's a big foundation for this that say that with FPS gaming, you can really improve your visual acuity, but also potentially improve amblyopia, lazy eyes, which is something that we thought originally wasn't possible after a certain age. We thought this could only happen in children, but now adults are showing long-term improvements from playing FPS games a lot, which is so cool. And something you can tell your mum.
Oh,
if
yeah.
If you play lots of FPS games and she's like, oh, you're wasting your life. Well, actually.
I thought you were saying, I can tell my mum. I was like, how do you know about my mum's visual problems? I was like, oh, I'll let
talk about your mum's lazy eyes. I know what she's like.
She listens to every podcast, so she can she can learn that and find out about FPS games.
No, I mean, classically, parents don't encourage gaming too much.
Was it, so FPS is one that's always interested me from a science point of view, because I don't know if there is much research on it. I looked a little bit into it, but I don't think there is anything out there that's particularly coined the term or understood it fully. But around proprioception and how we currently understand proprioception in a physical space, but we don't fully understand how it converts into a virtual space.
Right.
And how, like, in FPS, for example, someone knows if their character is behind cover based off of their understanding of that space and surroundings, but they don't use proprioception the same way we do in everyday life. They use it through a controller.
Yes.
So you have the stretch receptors within your hands and wrist that dictate your proprioception within a space. And so I wonder how our brain processes that and allows and how that converts to other things. So we've seen a lot of gamers become quite successful surgeons because of that connection of the proprioception there. We're using instruments to, so it's like there's a whole lot of interest there for me around what you described there, like the visual connection with the understanding where you are in space and time within a virtual space. Oh, it's all fascinating.
It's
stuff.
Fascinating. I agree. Yeah. It's completely.
And it's currently being researched quite heavily because I think a lot of people want to understand it, especially as we're going into a more online virtual world.
Yeah.
Gaming is a great place to study online.
Definitely. And it's the VR and it's all that stuff as well. But gaming has overtaken film and TV, right? It's the most popular form of entertainment. And you can see why. Mm. And there's just, back maybe 10-15 years, I think, don't quote me on that, there's been nothing on it because it was a silly little thing that silly little boys did in their bedrooms.
It wasn't science then, was it?
No, it was not science. And if it was science, it was about aggressiveness in teenagers. Video games are the devil's work, things like this. But now everyone games, and there are positive sides of it that people know about. There are negatives probably too.
Everything has negatives when overdone.
Of course, yeah, of course. I mean, you can be addicted to anything. That's the main thing. They say that in the DSM, which is the book of all the different mental health disorders you can have and all of the different symptoms that outline them. In the DSM, gaming addiction is written down. And I find it really annoying when people point that out, because you know what else is kind of included there? Addiction to eating drywall. And it's like, well, I mean, you can be addicted to anything. It's fine. And gaming is fun. So I see why.
there was a point where they were defining gaming addiction. So one of the advantages of defining gaming addiction is it allows people to research it and get funding for it and everything. So
exactly.
It's a good thing that they've defined it because it allows research to be done.
Absolutely.
But they also weren't sure whether to call it an addiction or a compulsion, because the difference between addiction and compulsion is the neurological effect within your brain. So drugs are addictive because they have a chemical reaction within your brain that affects your ability to be able to resist it, right?
Right.
And the same thing is true with alcohol. Some people have an addiction to alcohol, which changes their brain composition. It's not the actual habit. Like, some people are compulsive alcoholics versus people who are addictive alcoholics.
Yeah.
And so they were trying to work out with gaming whether it should be an addiction or a compulsion.
That's interesting.
And so I think that's where the research is being done. And some of the early research showed that there is probably an addictive nature to it with the way games are designed. They typically have that similar effect to what gambling does, which is that the need to win more.
Yeah.
That's like a very addictive human instinct, is to progress and to win and to beat other people and all that kind of stuff, which they can't do necessarily in everyday life. So it does create that addictive nature.
I haven't seen that research. I wonder how easy it is to actually split up those things, addiction and compulsion. because everything you do changes your brain, maybe not chemistry, but changes your brain volume in different places and the connections between different parts. So I feel like everything will cause you to be better and more inclined to do stuff, but that's not quite a compulsion. But I imagine they're really intertwined, so that's really fascinating.
There's probably a point where, like, for example, I became, I don't want to say addicted to gaming, I think I became a compulsive gamer.
Yeah, me too.
I was doing it to avoid other things. I wasn't gaming because I was addicted to gaming. I was doing it to avoid other parts of my life.
Right.
And so in that situation, that's where you could be like a compulsive, I don't know, social media. Like, social media has addictive natures to it. Yeah. Some people might be using social media in a compulsive way. Anyway, we're tangenting here. So there is lots of research being done in gaming, and you've contributed towards the science of gaming in some way, and maybe in the future more with the PhD.
Yeah.
So we'll take a little bit of a break from talking about your content and go to the question we ask every one of our guests, which is, what are your top five games? And so you can define them by games that have had the most influence on your life, just the ones you enjoyed the experience of the most. But yeah. What's your top five games?
I have to say Elden Ring, but even if I didn't have to say Elden Ring, I would say Elden Ring.
I guess I have to.
Yeah. No, it's beautiful. The design of it and just everything, it's incredibly beautiful. I mean, even if I didn't play it on stream and this never happened and it wasn't kind of the foundation of what I now consider to be a career, it's still just such a beautiful game, and it's the lore and the design. It's amazing. It's amazing. I use Elden Ring as an example when people doubt whether or not games can be a true artistic form. And it's like, well, look at this shit. You know what I mean? But yeah, other games, I would say Halo 3, because it's just so fun. And I used to play that with my brother. That was the first game I ever touched, basically. Well, I say touched. I watched him touch it.
And then asked, could I play?
Could I play? And he said, yeah. And he handed it to me for 5 minutes. And I was, you know, 6 years old, so I wasn't very good. And then he yelled at me. And then he took the controller away. But I was very happy with the situation because I liked watching it. He's lovely.
When we think back to siblings watching their other siblings play games, it's kind of like early content creation, early streamers.
Yes. You know, when I first was introduced to Twitch and live streaming, I didn't really get it. I didn't get how someone could watch someone for 4 hours, especially if it was gameplay. I don't know how you could sit there and just, what is there to say? And then I remembered, wait, I used to do this all the time. I used to watch my brother play these games, and it was great. It was so much fun. And then viewing that from that perspective, now I get it. Now I get it. And I'm the sort of person that could be on Twitch all day, every day, regardless of what it is, especially Elden Ring speedrunners. They're amazing. It's incredible.
I think any game which is speedrunnable and you watch people do it, it's like the beauty of the speed at which they do things.
The N64 Mario as well. Amazing.
The skips with the jumps up the stairs and things like that. Yeah.
It's so satisfying to watch.
Okay, so back to the top five games.
Top five, that's two. This is controversial, but I really like Halo Infinite.
Okay.
I think the reason why is because Halo was my first game, and I identify with that quite a lot. I have the Master Chief helmet. It's part of my identity. But I never really played it. It wasn't really mine. And then when Halo Infinite came out, that was the first Halo game that was new after I had started getting into gaming for myself, after I had started streaming. And I thought, okay, here's an opportunity to start fresh with something that's only mine. And I really, really enjoyed it. And it was something that I picked up quite quickly because I had that background. And it was really fun. And it was kind of the first game that I streamed properly. That and Splitgate. Splitgate was good.
So is that going to be in the next one?
Or? Yeah. Yeah. Put that as number four. Why not?
Okay. I mean, Splitgate, is that the one which is like a shooter, but with
portals? With portals. Yeah. Yeah. It's a little game, but it's good. I think someone told me that it wasn't playable anymore, that they removed the multiplayer. I'm scared to look.
When I saw that game, I thought, you know what I said earlier about gimmicks? That's going to be the game where people try it once and go, that was cool, and then never want to keep playing it.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree with that. It is fun, though. It's pretty good.
There's a lot of shooters like that where they try and reinvent shooter games. And realistically, the ones that are successful, are normally quite simplified. And,
yeah.
And like, you look at Call of Duty, you look at CSGO.
Mm.
You know, I mean, Valorant's kind of doing something slightly different now with character-based shooter games.
Yeah.
Kind of combining Overwatch with CSGO in a way. But still, there's always like a fundamental simplicity to it that people enjoy.
Yeah.
Whereas if you overcomplicate mechanics to try and engage with the hardcore player,
yeah,
it takes a lot for a new player to overstep that clunkiness of the mechanics, right?
Absolutely. I think fluidity is the most important thing with anything.
I can imagine if someone was good at Splitgate and they're against you, you would feel so awful.
Mm.
They'd just be like behind you and TPing around you and you wouldn't be able to deal with
it. Yeah. If you've seen the pro Splitgate players, it's madness.
Mm.
They are so quick.
Mm.
And they're, like you say, it's basically like a shadow just moving in all dimensions. I watched Moist Critical, or maybe it was on YouTube, so Penguins, but he plays Splitgate incredibly well.
Mm.
And it is shocking to see. Mm. It makes me feel very inferior. I'm just trundling along with my little sniper, but you know, it's pretty
trying
good.
To shoot people as they TP around. You're like, where are they?
Where are they? It's the day still, god damn it.
So is that four then? So we got Elden Ring, Halo 3, Halo Infinite, and Splitgate.
Oh,
are you sure you want it in there?
I don't want Splitgate as number four. Okay. I'm swapping it out. That's cheating though, isn't it?
You said early, right? You said, because we've both been on another podcast, Jinx TV's, The Games That Made Me, and in that podcast, you choose five games.
Yes. So those ones are Superliminal and...
So what?
Superliminal.
I've
you not
heard of that.
Oh
no.
My God, it's amazing.
Okay, what?
It's incredible.
Describe it.
It's basically, it's like the Stanley Parable, if you've heard of that one, which also goes there.
Yes, that's a narrated game. Yeah.
It's a narrated, semi-exploratory, but it's pretty linear. Mm. And you sort of just interact with the landscape and things like that. And there's an overarching story that's very philosophical. But Superliminal actually is more about optical illusions and the way that you perceive the world. So the way that you play it, the core mechanic, is by changing your perspective by moving around the room, and then that becomes real. So for example, if you pick up a door that's this big and you can pick it up with your mouse and just bring it towards you, that door is now big enough to fit through.
I see.
How you progress through the game.
So it's kind of like puzzles using optical illusions.
Exactly. Okay, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. I got a friend of mine who plays a lot of those kind of puzzle games on stream, and I love watching, I guess, playing them vicariously through other people.
Yeah, exactly.
As long as they're not too bad, then it's quite fun to watch puzzles being solved. And
definitely. It also combines a lot of psychological topics, which are really cool. So things like, it all takes place in a dream. So it's meant to be dream therapy. But they do it in a terrible way. And when I was playing the game, I was sort of thinking, this is awful. You would never say these things that the narrator was saying. I don't want to spoil anything, but you would never say these things to someone who was under hypnosis or dreaming. This is terrible. You're going to give them trauma. Oh my God. And then, well, I've kind of completely spoiled it. It has a purpose and it's all amazing.
Okay.
And it's fantastic.
Everything's there for a reason.
Everything's there for a reason. It's wonderful.
And then number five.
Number five is... anything that's cheating again. I'm terrible at this. Anything by Quantic Dream. So Detroit Become Human.
Okay. That's, I think we've had that in a top five before, if I'm not mistaken.
It's a very good game.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to try and convince you otherwise, but you did tell me one of your five games and the Jinx one was Sims.
Oh yeah. I played a lot of the Sims. But I'm not sure. Yeah, do you know what? I'm annoyed at EA, and that makes me remove it from all my lists.
That's fine. Two Halos, no Sims.
I still do enjoy The Sims. I think it's the one I have the most hours in, and I did play it last night for about 7 of them. But
and it's not making top 5.
Oh, I know, because I'm just so annoyed at the clunkiness of it, like you said. I have this really amazing gaming PC for the EEG stuff, obviously. And it still is stuttering all over the shop, and I have no idea. Anyway, and I'm on a rant now.
So it can get an honorary mention. Sims.
It gets an honorary mention, and it's pretty cool. It's used, The Sims 4 is used in some sociology and psychology studies to just see people's different habits and what they enjoy, and also gender and social norms. So they put a bunch of guys of different age ranges into a room. And previously they had let them have free reign individually on Sims 4 and for hours and hours, and they recorded what they did without telling them that's what they were doing. And then afterwards they put them in a discussion room and they would had to tell each other what they did. So these guys, they said, oh, I killed all my Sims. I burnt the village down or whatever. But actually, what they had actually been doing is decorating the bathroom and putting little flowers in places. But they didn't want to share that information with their peers. And that was fascinating. So the fact that it's used for things like that is pretty cool.
It's interesting. So that, that kind of shows what people would want to do in a situation, but what society has made them feel they should be doing.
Exactly. And I'm sure you can apply that to anything. I'm sure you could use The Sims as an example for anything like that.
That's fascinating. Yeah, I'll have to look into that, because that's one of the big things we spoke a little bit about with some of the psychology stuff we were chatting about. We had a very nice lunch we were chatting about.
We did some
very deep topics. But with like the social norms and what we're expected to do, like you mentioned earlier in the podcast, like you got into gaming through an older brother. And that's like that when we were growing up, that was how most young women would get into gaming, because there wouldn't be that traditional route of friend at school recommends you play or parents buy it for you because it's normal for you to play. And even now, if you go into a shop and say, oh, I've got a daughter, she's 9, what game would you recommend? Then they're gonna follow a social norms. And so it's interesting how that stuff, you can study that using games, because games are very normative towards way society is, because they try and fit those things. And Sims is a great example of that, right?
Definitely.
Yeah. Oh, very interesting stuff. So top five games, you had Elden Ring, Halo 3, Halo Infinite.
Gave you like 12.
Detroit Comes Human.
And Superliminal.
Superliminal. Very nice. Very unique. Halo 3 comes up a lot though, as you
it's
can imagine.
Good. I think a lot of the people, they start out with that, don't they? It's like the right, it came out at the right time for our age group, I imagine.
Yeah, 100%. So with that, we'll go back to the streaming journey and everything. So you mentioned about the EEG Elden Ring stuff, but you said you also do other things where you have your brain activity on stream whilst partaking in other activities like horror games. I think you even do singing, right, with it, to see how it changes when you're singing. What's been your findings through those brain activity scans doing other tasks?
Well, I think the biggest thing that I realized and that I noticed was how much your brain activity changes. And it's really, really clear. It's way clearer than I thought it would be. I thought I would have to really turn up all the sensitivities and really spell it out for people, all these subtle differences, but it's incredibly clear. For example, when I'm singing, I close my eyes and then all of a sudden there's this rush of beta activity, which is purple and like a low frequency. Or is it alpha? It's alpha. It's alpha. I'm a terrible neuroscientist. And because the reason why is because it's associated with vision and perception. So if your eyes are closed, there's a flood of it and you can see that straight away. And it's amazing. If you're moving, the first time I used it, just for fun, I was just looking at what my brain was doing. And there was a flurry of this really high activity, which is associated with motor control and movement. And I didn't know why. I thought there was something wrong with it. I thought my sensitivity was too high or something. I couldn't figure out what was going on. And I realized I was subconsciously, without noticing, tapping my foot.
Okay.
And I didn't know, but the brain scan picked it up straight away. And it was so, so fascinating. And things like I said before, the jump scares, the fact that that floods your brain and things change so fast. And it's just, it's wild. It's incredible.
I guess one question I had about the EEG. So I said earlier, when I played Rocket League with my chin, one thing I found out through that was how it affected my chin. My chin became very chafed.
Oh,
it was
no.
Very uncomfortable. And I hadn't even thought about that at the first. Yeah. And so I was wondering, looking at you with the EEG, at first I just think, oh, it just sits on your head. What's the negative side of wearing an EEG?
It does, if it's in the wrong place or if you're just not used to it, it does squeeze you a little bit. So okay. Like that, it does, it can hurt sometimes if you're wearing it too long. Not so much anymore, because I figured out where I'm supposed to put it and I'm used to it now. It's like wearing high heels. It just stops hurting after a while.
You built up your EEG calluses.
Yeah. I think the sides of my head are just really dense now. The other thing is it needs to be constantly adjusted. So you need to constantly be moving things around, moving your hair out of the way, and adding saline solution to each of the pads to make them conductive. So that gets all up in your hair. And my hair is just, it's never going to be the same.
I heard you on stream say once that you should probably shave your head to get the best results.
Hair messes that up. Hair lowers the accuracy. So when I put it on, I'm really careful to like move everything aside and things like that. But the reason I think I have to adjust it so much more than someone who had short hair or someone who was bald completely is because the hair gets under it and gets in the way. I think if I had a shaved head, I wouldn't have to do that so much. I don't know if it necessarily affects the accuracy for what I'm doing. I think I do compensate by moving it. And I always make sure to straighten and untangle and all of these things. But I'm also very naturally sweaty, so I think that helps.
Keeps the saline solution.
It does. Yeah. It's salty and conductive.
Perfect. I guess the idea with that then is, do you believe someone who was unable to use their hands for whatever reason, or their feet for whatever reason, or even their chin, subscribe before, would they be able to use an EEG monitor for gaming as like an accessibility tool?
It depends what it is, but not right now. I wouldn't recommend it. And I do say this, I do get people contacting me talking about various disabilities that they might have, or someone they know asking me what I'm doing. And I think it could definitely move in that direction. It could definitely help. I mean, they're using EEG to move wheelchairs and I'm blanking. What are they called? Like a prosthetic. Prosthetics. Yeah, yeah. That's the word. But I think right now, or at least the way that I'm doing it with the EEG, it takes more dexterity to put it on and adjust it and use it than it does to use a controller. Like dexterity with your fingers. And the fact that you have to train it up for hours and hours and hours and hours, that requires a lot of focus, a lot of time. It's very individual. It wouldn't work on someone else, my mental commands. So not right now.
Calibrated, it's quite clunky, all those things.
Yeah.
I think from what I know, there are other ways that for accessibility that would be easier. So like voice command activity.
Eye tracking as well.
Eye tracking, yeah. Voice command. Yeah, like eye tracking, I've tried that with Minecraft and it was incredibly intuitive. And in racing games as well, like it's so intuitive. You look where you want to drive.
Definitely. I would, if you're looking for a disability accessible device, a controller, definitely that way first before EEG. Maybe it'll get there. Maybe.
I guess the eye tracking one would probably be more consistent as well.
Yeah, definitely. I'm thinking about incorporating that into my hands-free controller. But we'll see.
But did you use eye tracking to go back to the analysis you did for your masters? Did you use eye tracking to look at where people were looking in the game?
No, I would have done. But at that point, we were kind of just coming out of COVID. So the study that I ended up doing, again, I played with all these things, but the study that I ended up doing was online. So I made these little mini games, like finding something in a crowded image, like a Where's Wally sort of situation, and all of this stuff. And I just recorded time taken. So it wasn't the most... it wasn't the best lab conditions and it wasn't amazingly informative. It did do well as a dissertation grades wise, but
I mean, we're finding lots of different clever ways to control gamers' abilities across the board. Like there was a recent study done on people before and after integrating exercise into their lives, and that sort of before and after test was through a series of mini games that detected aptitude in a video game. And with those, it was quite simplified, but you have to simplify it because it can't be something where an individual has an improved ability.
Exactly.
Especially if you're comparing cohort A with cohort B, as opposed to person A at one time and person B after.
Yes.
The experience. I can imagine that was quite tricky to manage. But anyway, with all this, your stream is now growing amazingly. You're on this upward trajectory. I guess what's next for you with content?
Next is, of course, getting the hands-free controller complete. So we're working on that constantly and it's getting there quickly, actually. It's developing really quickly. So that's mapping all of the buttons in varieties of different ways. So you can do everything you would want to do with a controller. Apart from that, we've got a bunch of other experiments planned, other psychological research planned. I won't give anything away, but it's really cool. Some of it's really cool and maybe slightly problematic, but it's going to be fun. Only problematic to me and my health. I'm giving it away. So lots of stuff like that. And then I'm going to start putting out more long form content on YouTube and stuff like that on different psychological topics. We're going to do a completely, once the control is finished, we're going to do a completely hands-free Elden Ring run again, boss crawl and other things. We did racing games with it recently, which is very, very fun. And that's pretty much what's in the cards right now. I think it's enough to get me going. It's enough to get me started, but that's pretty much it. Yeah.
I'm sure people can go check it out. It's, Perry, I mean, it's on in the description, everything, but the second part of your name, Perry...
Cariel. Perry Cariel. The word actually is a word, and it means anything relating to the cell body of neurons, because, you know, I just looked up all the words with Perry in it, and that was brain stuff, so...
Made sense. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
I've thoroughly enjoyed this conversation. Honestly, we could have gone on for hours just nerding out as we did beforehand.
Yeah, at lunch.
But we end the podcast with the same question for everyone, and that is, what does gaming mean to you?
Gaming is such a wonderful escape from everything, and it is sometimes such a beautiful and informative experience for lots of different people. What does it mean for me? That's really difficult. You end that with for everyone. You're evil. For me, it's a career, and it's kind of my foundation for everything that I want to know, all of the research I want to do, and everything that I want to build for myself.
Oh.
That was incredibly vague.
But it was unique.
Mm. So that was good. No, that feels like it's wrong.
No, you're just a scientist who uses gaming where most people... are just gamers. Oh. So, well, thank you very much, Perry.
Thank you so much. Sports Social Podcast Network.